Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You are listening to Missed Apex Podcast. We live F1. Welcome to Missed Apex Podcast. The title of today's show is Not Bad for a Number 5 Driver. That given to us by Anton Beal on Twitter. I'm your host, Richard Spanners. Ready? Welcome to this Spanish Grand Prix race review. I am joined by a panel of esteemed guests, foremost of which is Matt Trumpets. How's it going, Matt?
It's going fairly well. Did you say Spanish or Spanish?
Spanish Grand Prix. Why is that?
Because you're Spanners, so I was making a joke.
It's quite close, those two words. I see what you did there. Wow, wordplay. That is how grammar school of you, Matt.
Yes, well, I have to live up to the approximate emotional age my wife has assigned to me, and I like to do that as often as possible.
Yeah, it's a dad curse that you are forced to call out any puns that you see. Good afternoon of F1 for me, Matt. I did my normal pre-race ritual. The house was empty, so it was extra good. I turned the TV up super loud enough to annoy the neighbors, but my wife wasn't there to stop me. My favorite F1 cushion, I put my favorite F1 cushion on the floor, and I rearranged the sofa so that I'm like half the distance to the TV as normal, and then I'm sat on the floor so that the TV is like a giant cinema screen in my face. My entire world, my visual audio world, is Formula One. Sit down and watch the Spanish Grand Prix and enjoyed it. Enjoyed 2 hours of television viewing, pretty standard Barcelona Grand Prix, and then I ruined it all by going on the internet and everyone saying it was terrible and boring and the worst thing ever. I'm not saying it was a thriller. I'm not saying it was a modern classic. Just saying I enjoyed the telly today.
That's fine. Did you have any shouty bits? I always wonder that. Ooh. When people watch, like, because I have so much going on. Mm. I rarely get emotionally agitated just because I've got 3 different streams of information coming into my head at all times. But did you have any properly shouty bits this time around?
No, I don't think I did. I maybe a little bit with the racing point battles, but everything kind of worked out like it was supposed to today. So there wasn't that big kind of shouty moment. And yeah, you're right. I was missing that. But if we're yelling at the screen all the time, then doesn't that mean that we're just yelling at normal things?
Perhaps. Although I was sensing a merchandising opportunity. We should make foam Missed Apex bricks for you to chuck at the TV when the bad thing happens.
Or we can make Missed Apex t-shirts with slogans on the back for your significant others. Like, leave me alone. It's normal to shout at the telly when F1 is on. Please, please let me have this one thing in my joyless workaday life.
Leave me alone. I know what I'm shouting.
That's what we'll do. So we're going to have a fun race review as always. And we'll even talk a little bit about, you know, expectations for races and why I'm perhaps a little bit at odds, or I felt at odds when I went on the internet and everyone was saying they had a terrible time and I had a nice time. I asked around quickly, you know, I phoned Summers. I asked you guys in our WhatsApp chat. I asked on the Slack group. And I think I've identified some reasons why, you know, I'm probably half a step out of touch, you know, I'm getting on a bit now, and why Perhaps sometimes the internet melts down when we don't have a modern classic. So during the course of this race, I'm going to give you some opinions and you can get as angry with me as you like. So don't panic. The panel will routinely disagree with me. So I will say that Perez outperformed Stroll today. Someone on the panel is definitely going to shout at me. Vettel showed him. That's my opinion of Vettel this week. And he would have beaten Leclerc. Albon got lapped. And it's not good. And I'm going to say that it's Magnussen's fault. We are an independent podcast produced in the podcasting shed. With the kind permission of our better halves, we aim to bring you a race review before your Monday morning commute. We might be wrong, but we're first. And sometimes we're wrong about being first. But we are not just me and Matt. We are also joined all the way from Seattle by Nick Numbers Alexander. Hello, Nick. It's been a while.
It has been a while. I missed you terribly. I am so happy to be back.
If you were of a different kind of personality, I would have felt enriched by that. But because you're quite dry, it almost sounded like an insult. I have missed you terribly. I am glad to be back.
Yeah, back again. Boring race. But no, it's good to be back. I meant it sincerely.
Why don't you ever come on for the exciting races, Nick?
Well, it depends on how you define exciting, because it seems like for a very long time, if my favorite driver suffered misfortune, you found that exciting and I got to come on the show.
I your pain made me feel better. So that's how that works. In any case, Nick, good luck on your Missed Apex debut. Don't be nervous. It's just like a normal conversation, you know? If it goes wrong, it's my fault.
That's true.
You can do it. You can do this. I believe in you, Nick. And also joining us is our race analyst, Alex Jeansy Van Jean. How's it going, Alex?
It's going all right. I enjoyed the race today, especially because I got the house to myself. So I didn't have small people yelling at me saying, racing cars, can we turn it off? No, I loved it today. I thought it was great fun. Had lots going on, lots to watch, lots to analyze. And I really enjoyed today. I thought it was good.
Do you know what? It does help having no family in the house. I was the same as you. I had the house to myself. I had a can of light beer as well. And yeah, I could just sit there and just absorb the day with no distractions. And it was kind of like I treated it almost like a cinema experience. You know, it wasn't it wasn't Rambo 17. It was more, I don't know, Elmo's Fire, St. Elmo's Fire. I don't know.
The thing that I normally get is because I've normally got the iPad out with the live timing on it, which for a race like today, the live timing is crucial.
Yeah, absolutely.
I've normally got the kids trying to steal the iPad to watch Peppa Pig. So being able to not have to defend the iPad and put it on the back of the sofa and then on the side and then in various different places really, really helped. But no, we've got a lot to talk about today. I think a lot actually happened in this race. And maybe some people did missed bits, which is why they didn't like it. But it was a Spanish Grand Prix.
Yeah, no, absolutely sure. We will dissect the post-mortem on the Spanish Grand Prix later in the race. But let's start with the race, and let's start even before the beginning, Matt. The practice sessions themselves were kind of workaday. There was not much really to write home about, and even qualifying didn't quite blow up.
I beg your pardon, Romain Grosjean in fifth place. That's nothing to talk about. That's unheard of. What on earth was going on with Haas that they were suddenly really fast on Friday when normally, as we know, and like, look, I don't want to hold it against them. They have basically said, we're just not going to spend any money this year and see what happens.
Is that what
they said?
That's
exactly what they've done. And they've gotten exactly the kinds of results you would expect a team doing that to get. So I think they're hitting the bar they set for themselves, which is exceedingly low. But suddenly they turn up and they're like in fifth place.
Yeah, but that didn't translate to Saturday.
Because, and I think this is hilarious, they had to replace Grosjean's power unit overnight. And they even had to break curfew because there was a leak after they replaced it. And when he drove it out on the track the next morning, the car was perfectly ordinary, which sets you up to believe that perhaps Ferrari changed it because a broken Ferrari power unit being faster than a non-broken Ferrari power unit would look bad for them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or it's just maybe off-brand for them to be fast at anything at this point. I don't know. I mean, you tell me.
I don't know, Matt. I know like you and other Americans would be, you know, the expectation has been really high, but them, you know, and Alfa Romeo have taken a big hit with this Ferrari power unit. I've just parked all expectations for those three.
Yeah. I will say that I do believe they understand the car this year. Like the problem they had last year, I think they have solved it based on what I've seen. Even with the Ferrari power unit, it looks like they have a much better grasp of getting race pace out of the car. And it's just a shame they don't have, a Mercedes in the back to actually make them go faster.
Yeah, we definitely won't talk about the 19th and last place running track that Grosjean ended up in. But let's move over to Nick Numbers Alexander. Where's your Ferrari shirt, Nick? What's going on?
This is just part of the debut, I guess, where I say that I did Ferexit. We're done. Still pulling for Vettel today. Happy with that result. But I cannot subject myself to any more pain. Okay. I suffered through several years of thinking that, you know, Vettel would get to fulfill his childhood dream and be the one to ultimately unseat Mercedes as the champions. And I can't do it anymore. I can't.
So basically what you're saying is, he's Iron Man. Vettel's Iron Man and Ferrari is Thor's hammer and he's just not worthy to pick it up. And you're sick of him tugging at that hammer. Was that a terrible
analogy?
Not
what I said at all. Right, okay, I think the analogy would be that the hammer doesn't work.
Fair enough. Yeah, it's a terrible hammer. But you are, even if you've Ferexited, you are still a Germanophobe, a germophile. You are a Deutschophile. You're a Deutschophile still. Yeah, your wife is German. Is that right? A German speaker?
Not at all. No, she's American.
So I've got that wrong completely. I've met her, and she's definitely not German. But you are a Sebastian Vettel fan. And I have to say, he's coming under a lot of stick for his ultimate pace. And when he went out in Q2, people were still giving him stick. But the lap time showed he was only a whisper off Leclerc, which, it's not bad for a number two driver.
Yeah, so Stuart Neal in the chat is asking if I will migrate my support to Aston Martin. If Vettel goes there, and yes, I will most probably do that. He was, I don't remember how far off he was from Leclerc in the end, maybe a tenth and a half or so, but he was only 0.002 from making it to qualifying three, which, is quite a lowered expectation from every other year before this, but it still does look like an improvement with the new chassis. And ultimately I was impressed with what he was able to do, I would say, all by himself out on the track today.
Okay, sorry. Did you say chassis?
What would you call it?
Well, I would call it what it's called. I would call it the new chassis that he got.
Chassis?
Chassis, yeah. Say it with me.
Like chassis. Like schedule.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Do you know, I'm so confused between schedule and schedule. I don't even know which one is correct anymore. Van Gien.
First of all, I still don't agree with Nick moving from Ferrari, because that's what we call, when you talk about football, that's called being a glory hunter. So the fact that you've moved from Ferrari because they're not doing well anymore and you've now moved over to Red Bull stinks of glory hunter. But we'll let you off, maybe. I don't know. I still enjoyed taking the mick out of Ferrari. But no, Vettel definitely seemed a little bit better today. And in the race, if the race was about 10 laps shorter, he'd have pulled off a Leclerc today of stealthily finding his way near the front. But unfortunately, the tyres went off, but I'm sure we'll talk about that later.
So I have many things I would like to say about Vettel. I will maintain that he had the superior strategy today, starting on the medium tyre. But are we sure that Nick has enough tokens to switch teams, Spanners?
Oh, that's a good point, because you switched to Red Bull initially, and then I'm sure you came back to Ferrari at the end of last season. You may have used up all your fan tokens, Nick. We'll put it to the stewards, and if you don't like the answer, you can appeal endlessly in a painful and pitiful process of desperation instead of just improving your own performance. That's not a reference to anything else. Let's move on to the race. It was a reference to the teams continuing to protest Racing Point. There, got that out of my system. This is the part of the show where we turn to Matt Trumpet as the podcast elder, as the, in the Mist Apex Village, you get the most feathers in your hat, Matt. And when you speak, everybody gathers around and everybody says, guys, the village elder is talking. Everybody gather in a circle and listen to Matt Trumpet as he tells us where the race was won and lost.
And in my head, I'm thinking, and then we laugh quietly behind his back after he falls asleep halfway through the TV show. But whatever, I'm here. I have my opinions about where the race was won and lost. And I think we really have to look at Lance Stroll, and specifically the start of the race in Lance Stroll, where he gained how many positions and crucially put himself ahead of Valtteri Bottas into turn one, sent him wide. Perez was in front of him for a bit. And by time he got back around, Stroll, he lost 10 seconds to Max Verstappen up the road. Now, there's a couple of other important facts here. One is that Max stayed pretty close to Lewis until, for four straight laps in a row, Lewis turned fast lap, put him four seconds behind, and Bottas at that point had made up half the deficit. But it's also important to note that by time Max actually pitted, and they kept him out that long because the racing points were in his pit window, by time they pitted, he was in undercut range of Verstappen, but Mercedes chose not to do that. They kept him out for another few laps. So I'm going to stop there because it looks like Nick had a comment.
No, he was just scratching his nose, but I have a comment. Comment, which is, you know, I think your assessment of that is correct. At the moment, it looks I'm throwing you a bone so I can later disagree with you and people won't think that I'm just doing it just to hurt you. But it is fair to say that there's three guys really in contention for race wins at the moment. And that is Lewis, Valtteri and Max. I call them by their first names because I'm super familiar and they're my bezies. And Stroll took one of those guys out. And I think, Alex, I don't know if this is unfair. I think Bottas's ability to beat Hamilton is really kind of a small overlapping Venn diagram. So we've got Hamilton's ability to win on one side, a big circle, and Bottas has got a smaller circle, which just slightly encroaches Lewis's circle, and everything's got to kind of work out perfectly. He's got to get ahead. He's got to be ahead by either out-qualifying or jumping him at the start, and then something's got to happen to Lewis to stop him doing the normal tactic of making Bottas wear out his tyres, doing an overcut, and then having fresher tyres at the end. Basically, as Matt says, Stroll going in there and taking away Bottas's teeth almost immediately took Bottas's win Venn diagram out of the Lewis win circle.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, even if he hadn't got passed by both racing points, he only got passed by Max. That was it. He was never going to win that race today. Because as you say, he can only win if he qualifies on pole and gets to turn one first.
Yeah,
that's his only chance. And the fact that Lewis might not be quite on it that particular day. It's quite telling. You know, I mean, I can sit here and I'm ham-fossy and whatever, but prove me wrong. Show me when he hasn't, then those things kind of haven't happened. And it's really, really telling.
Nick, it's not unfair, is it, that, you know, we never see Bottas, he's behind, he never really charges through the field, puts that pressure on Hamilton, forces an error, and then cruises past.
Exactly. I wanted to jump in because I wanted to agree with you guys wholeheartedly. And maybe that isn't the most interesting thing. And sometimes we argue for the sake of argument, and then we get nasty fan mail about how, like, how could somebody really take that position? And it's like, well, somebody had to. But in defense of you two ham-fossy, you're actually absolutely spot on. I mean, we've seen it time and time again. These two cars are in a league of their own. They're out front 1-2 or 2-1, whichever way. And if Hamilton's behind, he has so many chances to do something. And Bottas only has the one play, it seems.
And there's also the problem that Bottas doesn't seem to want to overtake. He won't take that risky move. It took him so long to get past Stroll. And the first time that he got DRS, just send it. You've got the better car. They have a Merc engine in the back of it, so they will give you room. Just send it. But he didn't. He waited a whole nother lap and lost a whole nother second because he wasn't quite certain the overtake would be absolutely perfect, and then just waited for a complete clear DRS pass.
And while I don't wish to disagree with any of you, and in fact, I'm not really. I'm just saying it that way so people will think I might be. What was crucial about it was not that it took Bottas out of potentially winning, because I think we could look at how Lewis drove today and see that he never really had a chance to begin with, but it did absolutely make it impossible for him to even fight for second position.
Yeah.
And that's why that move was so crucial. That's why I didn't even bother to talk about Max. And going back to what you said, it's not just that, but he left that width on the inside for Stroll to drive into. There was a whole car's width on the inside that Stroll could drive into. If he'd been even half a car over, Stroll would have had to go around to his other side where Verstappen already was, and he would have been able to establish the same advantage that Stroll had through turns one and two and put him wide in turn three.
Yes, I think you're right. Now, look, I've identified a few people this season who seem to be quite timid on the starts, and Bottas is certainly one of them. Perez actually is another one who will not leave his nose in at the start, would rather give up a couple of places. And actually, Hamilton sometimes as well. But this is twice now, Alex, we've seen it. We saw it into Abbey at Silverstone, and we've seen it here today, where he's almost invited the overtake, and once he's got side by side, he's just allowed that lap one, that lap one pass.
There's no aggression in him.
Mm.
And that's the problem. You need a little bit of aggression. It's like when Stroll got his, what was an electric start.
Yeah, it was great.
Bottas saw Stroll going into a gap that was partly on the grass and gave him the room. He moved to the left. Bottas had stayed where he was, Stroll wouldn't have got past, but he moved over and gave Stroll the room. Otherwise, Stroll would have been on the grass. And I'm just like, Max wouldn't do that. Would Lewis do it? The difference is when you're in a title winning contention, you make different decisions. So it's like, if we get a dogfight between Max and Lewis this year, I think Max will win it. Not because he's the better driver, because Lewis will go, do you know what, kid? You can have a couple. You can have 7 points because I'd rather keep my points than have a fight.
Nick,
right? So Stroll started the race in fifth, and Bottas in second. So Stroll was two rows back, and he was on the other side. So the question for Alex is: it sounds like you've had a good look at Valtteri's onboard. I mean, would he have really been able to see Lance coming from across and two rows back?
He's got mirrors, but he did move. The footage is Lance goes way across the right hand side and Bottas moves left. So all I can say is he's given the room.
Yeah. So what I want to add is, first of all, in an unrelated note, Norris was the other one who really did not get off to a super great start. He lost two places. But I don't think, Nick, it's even down to that. I think it's, if you're at the start of a race, why are you leaving room for a car to get around you to the side that you're not looking when you have that option? To me, that's what I'm getting at.
And especially at Spain, where it's notoriously difficult to overtake.
Yes, absolutely. So we need to acknowledge that Stroll did have a lightning start, just got away from the line really well. And then when he had the opportunity to go past, he stuck it, saw the gap that Bottas left him, and then went all the way around. And also, we'll get to it a little bit later in the race as well, also fended off his teammate, who clearly wanted him to get past. And then the only thing that stopped him finishing above Perez, probably on position, was some slight differences in skill set that Perez has. But let's get back to where the race was won and lost up front. So now we are, realistically, we're left with Lewis versus Verstappen. And I loved your comment earlier when you were basically saying, so Hamilton was only just ahead of Max, essentially, until he didn't want to be anymore. And then he just went away. He seems to pull a second at will. And that is when Verstappen started getting a little bit desperate, a little bit irritated on the radio. He can see Hamilton going ahead. When he tries to keep up, his tyres that were fine, now suddenly they're not biting where he wants to because he's having to push. And we heard a very different Max Verstappen on the radio than we did in Silverstone when everything was going well and he had all the tyres in the world and the Mercs were falling apart and it was all jokes. Now he's like, these tyres are not good enough to catch Hamilton. Give me better tyres. And whilst we thought it was like super clever last week when the team were going, no, hold back, save your tyres, hold back. We thought that was clever. It was a genius move. And it worked out well when he said, no, I want to attack. This time around, he was arguing with the team again. But I'm not sure he was correct this time, Matt.
No, it was kind of funny. Although I will hand it to him, his very first comment when his race engineer came out and said, oh, we're closing the gap to the Mercedes in front. His reply was,
no,
Hamilton is driving really slow. And he wasn't wrong about that. But yeah. I will say that being right last week at Silverstone has unleashed Max's inner strategist. And it may not be in Red Bull's long-term interest to let it continue to be that way. Because he was like, give me new tires now. I can pass both racing points with ease. All I need is new tires. And they're like, Max, I think we'd really rather get you out in front of them and not have you have to pass them. I know it feels like you're losing lots of time to Hamilton, but we're doing some math back here, and it's not looking pretty if we do it the way you want.
Van Gene, at Alex Van Gene on Twitter. And now you're basically a Twitter celebrity. You've passed 1,000 Twitter followers. You made it. Congratulations on...
Woohoo!
Yeah, there you go. And now you've got a really long, laborious wait to get a next significant figure. It takes forever. Or maybe
it's
I'm all
right. My next significant figure is getting to 100 on YouTube. Oh, so really? Look for me on YouTube, subscribe and click the bell.
But, right, okay. Don't subscribe to Alex Van Gene on YouTube because he streams me drunkenly playing video games where I suddenly get...
Which will be after this. But you're coming online and playing... Oh, no, you've got a podcast thing. Me and Danny Henney are going to be on.
I will get on after I do the edit. But I suddenly get transported back in time. I'm 25-year-old Corporal Spanners and I'm like going down in prone position. I'm on the floor of my living room. And it was your mate. It was our mate, Danny. He turned around and went, are you lying on the floor of your real life living room? Like, oh, yeah, I've taken this too far.
And he called you Rambo. That's a compliment. He called you Rambo. The problem is this conversation now made me forget my point.
Yeah, no, me too. Yeah, we were talking about
what
F1.
Were we talking about?
I think it was F1. I think it was the Spanish Grand Prix.
Maybe.
but Max Verstappen, we can't now uncork the bottle where he made that great call and overrid the team. And the team are all happy to like obviously soak that in and be like, oh yeah, Verstappen, true team leader. And he really showed something special last week. Not taking that against him. But they're going to have now the same problem that some teams have had with Lewis Hamilton, where Lewis Hamilton felt empowered to make calls and they weren't correct. And then obviously you've got Paul de Resta. If you remember Paul de Resta back with the Force India, where every single tire decision, he was saying, no, that's not the right decision. This is terrible. And I remember one race, I can't remember which track it was. His race engineer came on the track and said, Paul, we're thinking about pitting you. Your tires don't look great, but it's your decision. And then he was out of the team. So I'm not saying that Red Bull and Max are in danger of doing that, but now they have a new problem, which is Verstappen is empowered to make those tactical calls. Alex, I think that was our point. I think that's what we were talking about. I was waffling long enough for you to remember what it is you were going to say.
No, with Max, I think he was so desperate to stay close to Lewis and stay ahead of Bottas that he just wanted it was a bit Lewis of him where he's moaning about the tires, like, I just want to be on better tires. And I think the problem was he was like, I'll overtake these racing points really, really quickly.
Yes.
But yeah. The problem is trying to overtake racing points really quickly. Yes, he probably would get past them quickly, but he'd probably lose 2-3 seconds in the process. So it wouldn't actually be better for his greater cause, especially because of how close it was between him and Bottas at the end of the race.
Michael Distelhoff in our live chat room says, give credit where credit is due. Lambays shut him up soon enough. And hello to our live chat room. The names I'm seeing flying by. Very busy chat room today. DJ, M. DeLorean, Mike, Tammy, Jorenz, who says, shut up about your living room. And you're wrong about Max's comment. Hey, Jeroen Bones, is that a Dutch name by any chance? I don't want to upset our Dutch listeners, Matt. I think that Max is showing he's not a star of the future anymore, as much as the commentary said that last week. He's a mega, mega star of the present. Like, he's insanely good. I'm just talking about how you manage now your absolute star driver when he's making calls. Although I'm not completely convinced that would have made a massive difference. Whilst we're talking about where the race was won and lost, I think Hamilton just had it. The whole Hamilton Mercedes package had this race from start. As soon as he was ahead on lap one, he had the race. He could do pretty much whatever he wanted.
Yeah, that's hard to disagree with because, I mean, he just, again, like you said, he turned it up at will, laps 10 to 13, 10 to 14, put in four fast laps in a row after driving as slow as he wanted. Still not letting Max pass and pretty much backing Max well up into his teammate who was chasing from behind, which strategically speaking would have been a good thing for him. Once it looked close enough, he's like, okay, guys, I'm out of here. And his job was done for the day at that point. I mean, mainly his job was, okay, I'll avoid all the back markers, which is everybody except for the top three finishers, by the way.
And so in the end, you know, we were sort of trying to see whether or not Bottas would be able to close that gap to Verstappen. I don't think Verstappen really had a chance. And then some differences in strategy between the two Mercedes.
Well, I love that you brought that up because this brings us to our second where the race was won and lost. And that was Max's last stint on the medium tire. At the end of the first stint, the gap from Valtteri to Max was about 1.5 seconds. At the end of the second stint, the gap from Valtteri to Max was about 1.5 seconds. And at the start of the third stint, Max took 6 seconds out of Valtteri. And when he came out on that soft tire, he absolutely positively could not make it up. And the soft tire, essentially, for Mercedes, and this was a third place, the soft tire in the last stint did not work for them. And it did not work for them so hard that Lewis on the radio was like, you're not giving me any of that soft tire, young man. You go back and you talk to your superiors and you make me a better offer.
Oh, I love that. Did Lewis have foresight? Did he see that Bottas was struggling on those soft tires? Or is it because generally this season, the soft tire hasn't been a go-to race tire? Like, there hasn't been that, right, let's get in with 15 laps to go on the soft tire and go. Nearly every race we've had so far, the soft tire has been pitched at a level, whereas it's possibly the qualifying tire, with the exception of last week's Silverstone, but there's no real strategic advantage to going back onto it. Van Gene?
The temps were bonkers.
Oh, were they?
And he's obviously aware of the track temperatures. And he's like, actually, I'm not going to use the soft tire. No, thank you. I'd rather have the safety of the medium tire that I know I can go on. Max is on the medium tire. Why would I go on something different? There was an interview after the race with Toto. And Toto was like, I'm so glad Lewis picked that tire and argued with us, because it actually might have put him under threat from Max, because Max was so quick on the medium.
Yeah, and well, we've been talking about, obviously, Verstappen making that call. We're then going to praise Hamilton for making that call. And in fairness, Hamilton doesn't always get it right from the cockpit either. But when it comes to tyres and which tyres he wants to be on, he's been talking through it with the team enough, and that it's been quite a collaborative process. We've heard over the team radio when they've been selecting tyres, and the team have got it wrong a couple of times when he said, I wanted a different tyre. So I think this time when he went, nah, no softs for me, they ain't going to last, I think the team just listened to him. And look, and that's not berating, you know, saying Hamilton's better than Verstappen. Hamilton is older than Verstappen. Hamilton's been racing Pirelli-era tyres longer than Verstappen. So anyway, come and yell at me. Spannersready@gmail.com. You can yell at me for all my opinions that you think are incorrect, but be nice. There's no, just say that I was wrong and you disagree. You don't have to say, I disagree, but you're an obed.
I actually think the performance of Max and the performance of Lewis compared to the rest of the field today was a different level.
Yeah.
Max and Lewis were on the same level today, just Max obviously doesn't have as quick a car. But the way those two performed today was incredible compared to pretty much everyone else on the rest of the grid. Max is the star of the future.
Right. I know we have a strict 1 hour time limit that if we may even do today, but we could talk about this topic at quite some length. Just the relationship, the radio between the driver and the engineer, the difference between providing feedback and being a pony and saying, I want this. And so sometimes it seems like the drivers are both, like, different drivers might be kind of saying the same thing, like, oh, well, I think I can make mediums work to the end of the race. And another driver might be like, no, the softs are the wrong thing. But, like, they're ultimately trying to say the same thing in the heat of the moment. And I think a lot of times we're overly critical of how we, not you, Spanners, not in this instance, but, like, generally overly critical of how we hyper-analyze these radio messages.
Yeah, we've got to. That's the drama. That's the drama of these radio messages. I love getting an insight into how that works. You know, with the whole Valtteri, it's James. And in Hungary 2013, Nick, I don't know how into F1 you were at that time, when Hamilton was really pushing hard to defend quite hard against Rosberg, and they were on for a podium. So the Mercedes tacticians were trying to get them to stop fighting. And in the end, Ross Brawn had to come on the radio and go, no, guys, seriously, have I got this wrong? Who was it?
China. Malaysia. It was China.
I didn't say
Malaysia.
Malaysia. Malaysia. Malaysia.
It was Malaysia. Malaysia. And it was Ross Brawn. It was Ross Brawn.
Lewis,
sorry.
Lewis won Hungary.
You're right.
That's hardly the point. He obviously is, the point is he's trying to make is very valid. I've definitely heard Lewis. It's James. I've totally lost my train of thought there.
Oh,
sorry.
I'm so sorry. It's the relationship.
It's my debut.
Yeah, don't worry. Like I said, if it goes wrong, it's my fault. I'm driving this aeroplane. I've got the steering stick, Nick. It's not your fault. That's how aeroplanes are driven, I believe, with the steering stick. But look, you know, we see these relationships with the engineers, And it's about trust and authority. So at some point, the team principal is going to come on and go, this is Ross Brawn, sold station, so Lewis, who we paid loads of money for, can get a podium. That's what that was. Sometimes, though, it's like the relationship me and Matt have, where we kind of know who's going to make a call in a certain situation. But sometimes we know that, like, a super insisting overrides who might normally do that thing. So whereas Matt might do the show notes and he'll do a thing, I'm like, I really want to go in a different direction with Won and Lost. And he'll be like, no, we're doing this. I'll go, okay, normally. But then he'll know if I sit there and go, dude, no, I really want to start with the Perez overtakey thing. And he'll go, okay. He'll sense that. Oh, he really wants. So the drivers will have that kind of relationship with their race engineers, Nick. So yeah, generally the race strategist will make the call, but they'll trust Lewis enough to when he goes, oh, no, come on. This is like, I get like two of these a year where I get to over trump you.
Yeah. And I remembered my point, which I'm going to bring up now, is that I really thought Martin Brundle was off base when he was making some comment that we should just like get rid of team radio. And I'm sure that I'm exaggerating it, and that's not really what he meant, get rid of all the team radio. But I like getting as much of the radio piped into the feed as possible. And I would even love to, maybe I'll do this one day, just get the app and just do the onboard and just listen, just watch the whole race, like from one perspective, start to finish, and just get that whole, all that information.
I think it's about expectation. So at the moment, the drivers know that some of the radio calls will get put onto the feed. And if you're Lewis Hamilton, you probably know that more of your radio calls are going to get put on than Magnussen rolling around at the back. If you change that expectation and go, guys, you are effectively your broadcasters. Every time you hit that radio button, you are a broadcaster in an entertainment program. Expect what you say to be on the radio. You know, there's no privacy. It's just entertainment, Matt.
Yeah, exactly. And HandSync in the chat has put forward my idea, which is much like us and iRacing on Discord. The driver should be able to talk directly to each other while they are racing, and it should all get broadcast, because, oh my goodness, wouldn't that be entertainment?
Yeah, I mean, we've had systems like that in our racing, in our iRacing tournaments, and we've done it live with karting now as well. Actually, it's technically reasonably difficult to do, but we've had our live karting commentary where we've then gone to, right, a live helmet cam, a helmet mic with Brad, and Brad's talked us through. And I know, Alex, you weren't happy because he was on the stream and he was on the thing and he was chatting away. He was going, yeah, these are the challenges of this corner. It's hard to overtake here. Van Gene's defending. Oh, no, hang on a minute. I've got him. Yeah, no. And then he carried on. But yeah,
that was after he went really, really fast through a yellow flag to catch up about four seconds.
Oh, here we go. We're not having that argument again. Nick, rescue us before we have this argument again. But yes, you're right. Yeah, driver to commentary would be amazing if you could do it.
You'd have to have a switchboard operator in the garage, I think, would be the simplest way to make that work. But Matt's shaking his head, but how slapstick comedy would it be if, you know, I won't even name a name, but if a driver gets on the radio and says, you patch me through that other driver, and they're like, why? What are you going to say? Remember, this is broadcast on live TV. You're not going to say anything that would get us in trouble, would you?
Trumpets.
Yeah, no, that's what I meant. I meant the driver should be able to talk to each other while they're racing. Forget the people in the booth. That doesn't matter. Imagine what Stroll would be saying as he was cutting his way past their Mercedes. Imagine what got said to Grosjean. I mean, just like, think of the fun.
No, I understood your point. I'm just imagining a switchboard operator connecting them from the garage, like, put me through to Hamilton, and then someone, you know, getting the
I like it.
The rotary phone. And
okay, Matt, Won and Lost is okay, relatively simple on a race like this, but you did make an interesting observation between the strategies, between the one stop and the two stop.
Yeah, I added a whole extra section without asking you called Winners and Losers. Okay, because I knew you wouldn't have a problem with that.
Oh, hang on. It needs a theme tune. It needs a hang on. I can do this on the fly. I can do this. Winners and Losers. It was too loud. Let me try again. Now it's not working at all. No, it's broken. That'll have to do. That's what that section sounds like now.
That feels appropriate somehow. I think that's right on brand for us. Yeah. I'm going to move on to my section now, though. It just occurred to me, looking at the results, and I'm not saying I'm going to bother to do this every time.
No, nope.
I was struck. I was like, wow, it looks like a lot of people finished where they qualified. So I went and looked, and here you go. Shall we do losers first?
Yeah, let's be super negative. Loser. Yeah. Was Van Gien at Buckmore Park under that yellow flag?
Yeah. Van Gien at Buckmore Park under the yellow flags. After that, it's our dear friend and show favorite, Alex Albon, who lost two whole positions for reasons we can discuss later,
yes,
having to do with Red Bull strategy. Our dear friend Lando Norris also lost two positions. And then everybody's favorite, Romain Grosjean, lost a whole position. And we can add Perez to that group, but only thanks to the penalty. Without the penalty, he finished where he started.
Okay.
But with the penalty, he did technically lose one. So I included him because that's just the kind of way I do things.
Okay.
And none of those seem really too terrible. The winners, Vettel, four places.
Nice.
One stop, by the way. Ricardo, two places. One stop, by the way. Ocon, two places. One stop, by the way.
Wait a minute. Hang on. The old ticker's working here. You've said one stop for all the people who gained positions.
Yep. And I'm going to stop doing that now, and I'm going to mention Verstappen, Sainz, Gasly, and Magnussen. Although Magnussen was a one stop, too.
Good. So you reckon the one stop was the way to go?
One stop was the best strategy, even though, as we'll talk about with Vettel, Ferrari hardly did their best to help him out managing it along the way.
There's a whole Ferrari segment, for sure. Van Gien.
One stop was the way to go if you were in a rubbish car with a half-decent driver. Basically seems to be pattern there. All the good drivers did one stop and got further, except Perez, and got further ahead.
Okay, brilliant. All right, tell you what, let's move away from won and lost for a moment. We've got some talking points coming up. We can talk about the Albon strategy. I basically saw that as, you know, Max versus the Mercedes guys. I saw it as then Racing Point versus Albon as well. And then an interesting look at Ferrari. And then also like that great midfield scrap that was fantastic. And we'll just talk a little bit about, the race in general, the Barcelona Grand Prix and where it stands in F1 legend and modern F1. Let's start with Albon and what went wrong for him. So we've been split on Albon. He's very popular. People seem to like him. He is clearly a talented guy. George Russell did that thing where he went on and said, Red Bull are making him look like idiots. He's not doing anything wrong. He's brilliant. I really like him. So, come on, don't yell at me here. I think we've seen enough this season to say that he's underperforming. It's not just qualifying. I think he's underperforming in the race. Today he got lapped. It's a short lap, granted. He had a bad strategy, granted. But he got lapped by his teammate who finished second. And he was miles off his teammate who won the Grand Prix last weekend. This is the very, very top. Matt's going mental. I can see Matt go mad in the background. We'll go to Van Gien first. But Van Gien, this is the top. This isn't a playground. This is the very pinnacle of motorsport. This is it. You don't get nearly a full season to show that you're good. If he was a striker in football, in the footballs, he'd be on the bench waiting for the best striker. He'd be waiting for Gasly to break his leg in the FA Cup semi-final so he could play in the finals. Albon would be on the bench now. He's getting a lot of chances, but I feel now it looks like the chances might be running out. Lots of people are going to yell at me. You be the first of those people to yell at me.
So you said we like Albon.
Yeah.
Lovely, really nice guy.
Great, and a great talent.
He's fighty. Silverstone was great for fighting.
Yeah.
Amazing overtakes. But his biggest problem is qualifying. You can't be 7/10 off your, even if your teammate is Max Verstappen, you can't be 7/10 off your teammate. You know, let's talk about the Mercedes for 2 seconds. Lewis Hamilton, greatest qualifier of all time statistically. Bottas is still keeping him within a tenth, couple of tenths single qualifying session and sometimes beats him. Albon can't do that, but Gasly couldn't do that. The only person that actually ever got close to him was Daniel Ricciardo. But he had no pace today. He, as you said, he got lapped and he has to put his finger out. And if he had qualified fourth on the grid, which that car is obviously capable of doing, it could have been a very different battle today.
Oh, absolutely.
They could have got two Red Bulls in between two Mercedes today if Bottas had qualified properly. And
well, hang on.
If Albon had qualified properly. But because he can't do it, it's what's affecting him. And because the midfield is so close in Formula One at the moment, you can't afford to be that far off. You know, back in 2014, when the Mercs were so far ahead, Bottas could have, Nico could afford to be half a second off Lewis, and it wouldn't matter. But he can't do that now.
Okay, so I think you're right. Like, if he'd have been in fourth place on the grid today, Nick, you know, he could have got in there, and he could have been the one ahead of Bottas, affecting the Mercedes strategy. Chat room, before Nick comment, give me the case for the defense, because I'm looking for one. I want to see a case for the defense, Nick.
Yeah, there would have to be some defense that is some sort of fact pattern that we don't have the information for. There would have to be something fundamentally different about the car. He's 7/10 off his teammate. Alex is absolutely right. You can't be that far off your teammate. And then if you looked at the times in Q2, I mean, from, you know, like P3 to P10 is like 8/10. I mean, 7/10 is an absolute eternity. It has to be better. And put Gasly in there, in my opinion.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Trumpets.
Well, it's a good thing you have me on the show, because all of you are exposing your horrible ignorance about the situation of poor Alex here. First of all, he's a driver who's been has not one but two wins stolen from him by Lewis Hamilton crashing into him. Let's not forget that. And one of those was this season. Second of all, last week, as I clearly demonstrated with my excellent post-race review of lap times, had Red Bull put him on a different strategy, he would have been in for a potential podium last week at Silverstone. And let's not forget that when you give him a late pit stop and fresh tires, he will not be held up by all of those people, unlike certain other drivers who drive Mercedes cars. But finally, I really do want to talk about today's race in particular. Now, I'm not going to go too much in.
You just did like loads of points. So just let me address that. So you're going to go back to today's race in particular. Just to go back to some of those previous points, of course, you know, all drivers are going to miss out on some stuff. I still feel like he's gotten in those incidents himself. Three incidents now that cost him places. That's partly on him as well. See how the season evolves. If that becomes a habit, because at the moment he's got like a hit rate of like, you know, 30% or something of incidents. If that continues, then that's on him. But people are really quick to praise him for these overtakes and fight backs, Nick. And I'm just not willing to give him full credit for, oh, he did a great overtake on Gasly. So he shouldn't be there.
Right. So I feel a little bit offended because I said, maybe there's something I don't know. Maybe there's facts that I don't have. Yeah. And then Matt turns around. And he's like, you're ignorant. You don't know that this, that, and
the other. I know. That was rude.
I don't understand how he could have won a couple of races if he hadn't crashed into Hamilton, or Hamilton crashed into him, or whoever's fault it was, or he might have been on for a podium here or there. What has that got to do with being 7/10 off your teammate in qualifying at Spain? Not a defense.
However, what are Red Bull going to do? Because what are they going to do? Give the drive back to Gasly, who also got annihilated by the same gap? And the question I keep asking myself is that Red Bull rubbish? Yeah. And Max is just absolutely out of the park phenomenal, which he may be, and Albon and Gasly would get out what the car's supposed to get, and Max is getting more? Or do you end up swapping them over and then absolutely annihilating Albon's confidence, put Gasly in, who's obviously on a confidence high because he's doing really, really well in that white car, whatever it's called.
White car's fine.
one of six. and then he goes up against Max, is also 7/10 off, because that is what will happen. I don't see Gasly getting any closer to Max like he did before. I don't see the point. They've got to put somebody decent in, someone new in.
Matt Franconian guy says, what if the car just suits Max?
Well, considering it was pretty much developed directly for him,
yeah,
that's not really a surprise. But a quick reminder before I move on to today's race.
Yes, sorry.
That Gasly was kicked out of that seat because the one thing he could not do was overtake sufficiently.
Yeah, yeah. I get it. I get it.
He was finishing so much farther behind where Albon is finishing. That's what they liked about Albon.
We're talking about today. Why did he get a rubbish strategy today? It's because a Red Bull, right? In a Red Bull, the same Red Bull that Verstappen had, and he was like, it's okay, put me behind the racing points. I'll spank them. Not a drama. I'll fly over the top of them, boss. It's all right. Albon couldn't get past Perez, and that's why he ended up on the Duff hard tire potential one stopper.
Here's where I have a problem, is that I'm not sure what Red Bull's strategy was with Albon. I didn't see him really make any effort to overtake the racing points in front of him, which made me wonder if not their original strategy was to go long with him and let him hang out behind the racing points and sort of race them on the second stint or race them on the third stint. But what I do want to make a quick side point about qualifying, which is he did qualify P6 for this race, which is better than he did at the previous race.
Yeah,
and that post-race, Horner is still talking about problems they need to sort out on their side to help him. So yeah, maybe that's just PR boilerplate, and they're going to say that till they ax him in the middle of the night, as they tend to do. But I don't get the sense that they have given up on Albon yet, so I don't think we should either.
Okay, so we'll wrap this up, but let's go to Nick first, then Vanjie.
He's 7/10 off his teammate. He's behind cars that got penalized for ignoring blue flags. Like, he did not do a good job in qualifying, and your argument is that he did, and I don't think that's right. And I think my answer to Alex is, what are you gonna do? Put Gasly back in? And the answer to that is just yes. Let's give it a go. Let's try it. I'm all for it.
Guys, just to be clear, Vanjie, like, people have forgotten that Daniel Kvyat like exists. So just to be clear, Daniel Kvyat has not died in a biking accident. You know, he's still there somewhere. Oh gosh, biking accident. I did see that MotoGP clip, by the way. That was horrifying. It's worth Googling that. I believe everybody's okay out of that, but
and the Moto2 one was bad as well.
Basically, one of those. This is why bikes aren't—they're not real. They're witchcraft, right? One of the bikes, the rider fell off. I think they're called riders, or what are they called? Jockeys. The jockey fell off.
Projectiles,
and then the bike continued across the corner like a bullet, and then like
killed Rossi.
Jeez, went into the leaders.
If Rossi was a meter further forward, Rossi would be dead right now.
I believe.
It's the Formula One podcast.
No. It's also a Matrix podcast. If you do the slow mo of that, he did a Matrix style thing where he like Keanu Reeves did. He went backwards. He was like, whomp, as the bike went over. Right. What were we talking about? Albon, Vanjie, your point.
The reason Red Bull dropped Gasly wasn't because he was so far off Max. The reason they dropped Gasly was because he wouldn't overtake anybody. At least with Albon, he's going for the moves. You know, Silverstone was great and partly made even more great because of some of the amazing overtakes Albon made. Okay, it was a fast car overtaking slower cars, but he still went around the outside of 2-3 cars around cops, which you don't do, which was still mega, mega impressive. But yeah, so I don't think putting Gasly in is the right option. I don't think putting Kvyat in is the right option. And I think what you get with development of particular drivers is Albon is quick. Albon is a fighty racer. So they work with Albon and push him forward. They won't change him mid-season. I think they're absolutely mental if they do. They give him to the end of the year. And then if they don't want him going forward, they put somebody else in. But it can't be Kvyat. It can't be Albon. Sorry, it can't be Fiat. It can't be Gasly, because they aren't up to scratch either. You know, Danny Ric was never, ever that far off.
Yeah.
Max. Yeah. You know, okay, has the car gone in the direction of Max Verstappen? 100%. Without a shadow of a doubt, it's gone in Max's direction and they have to deal with it. But unfortunately, that's the problem.
Right. Which brings me back to today's strategy and why I really think it's a terrible idea to look at how he did today and blame it on him. Because he started out this race with a new hard tire, a new medium tire, and four used soft tires. And when I say used, some of them had done a grand total of 3 laps.
Yeah.
And Red Bull chose to put him on the hard tire, and not just put him on the hard tire, but pit him in such a way that he came out behind the battle between Ocon, Raikkonen, and Magnussen, who were all at the ends of their stints. And I cannot imagine a worse strategy call if you just dialed up a random stranger in Alabama and said, hey, I've got a race going on. What should I do now? And just did whatever they told you to do. It's just remarkable to me that they would pit him that poorly when he had these, he could have stayed on his tire and just rolled behind the racing points. Mm. It would have been an entirely different race for him. Why they chose not to do that is a mystery to me.
So
it's a real mystery.
I guess they must have thought they were losing too much time behind the racing points, and they felt that maybe they could long run him on a one stop, and then when everyone did their second stops, suddenly he pops out in front of the racing points. That's got to be the thinking.
Yeah, got but then why didn't they one stop him? Which was the better strategy
because
they do stop him.
Once they one stopped him and realized it was a terrible idea, they then had to go, oh, okay, we've got to do something different now. I'm not saying I was arguing with Summers. They did the wrong strategy, said Summers on Twitter. That's how he talks. Matthew Summerfield from motorsport.com. Right. What I said to him, I said, okay, let's give him the best defense in the world. Where without that bad strategy does he finish? And Summers' opinion was 5th or 6th. And that's still not really where we want him to be. Let's hope Alex Albon shuts us up. Maybe in the next 4 races, he shuts us up and does start getting podiums, because that's where he needs to be.
I see if they ran him long enough and put him on the soft tire, fighting for 4th and 5th position.
Okay.
But he would have done the same. He would have finished where he started or possibly improved a spot, which outside of Vettel, no one else did.
Fangine.
5th would have been good enough last year when you had a fully functioning Red Bull, a fully functioning Merc, and a fully functioning Ferrari. Yeah. But there isn't. Mm. He needs to be 4th.
Yes.
The absolute minimum has to be 4th. If he's lower than 4th, he is completely underperformed. And I don't want to, for want of a better word, crap on Alex Albon, because I like the guy and I want him to do well. But he just, I mean, qualifying is everything at the moment for him, it seems, and he needs to do it.
Matt. It's a good point, Alex. Thank you. Matt, I'm going to ask you, it's a guessing game. We're going to change the tone here
17.
Just for a second. Ooh, so close. When you hear the final answer, you're going to be kicking yourself. You're going to kick yourself. We're going to talk about Ferrari next, because Nick's here, and I just enjoy doing that, particularly this season. Guessing game. So you said 17. Bold move, bold strategy to do the answer before the question. Guess how many people have jumped into our live stream currently? Now, we're here. We're 50 minutes into the show.
500.
Okay, so last season, we would have been delighted with 500. At the moment, 2,910 people have jumped in to our live stream to speak to us. The new YouTube statistics are pretty good, actually, so I can see all this. We currently have 890 people concurrently in this stream, which is a massive, massive thrill. So I want to say a massive thank you to everybody who jumps in on our live stream. You can go to YouTube and search for Mr. Apex Podcast. We're there. You, if you're wondering what the live stream thing is, you can do it on your phone. You'll see our faces, and then you have a little live chat room. And it's fairly well behaved. It's well moderated. We like the people there, and it adds to the experience. If you remember, Matt, we lost the live stream one time on a show, and I was panicking because it just wasn't the same experience.
Yeah, I mean, we miss incredibly keen insights like Hassan Davis saying everybody is still missing the point that Albon has yet to have even a full season in Formula One.
That's
which
not
turns out to be true.
That's not true. What are you on about? Is that true?
No, he's not had a full season.
He's not had a full season in Red Bull.
Not in Red Bull.
Oh, okay. Well, that's two different things. Yeah. Yes, I know. He's still new. But this isn't, you know, this isn't F1 newbie driver school. This is the pinnacle of motorsport. I was quite surprised when I saw Nissani rolling around the track, and he had a green learner flasher plate on. Now, I know that's been like a long-standing thing, but I'd completely forgotten about it. But you shouldn't have drivers who need a green flashy light in Formula One. If you still need to learn about motor racing, there's Formula 2, 3, 4, and I presume 5 and 6. I don't know how the lower...
7.
Yeah, I don't know how the lower tiers work. But, you know, you shouldn't have... A driver who's coming into Formula 1, it should be, you're coming to Formula 1 because you've proved yourself over hundreds of thousands of drivers out there. You are the best. You're now entering the pinnacle of motorsport. Deal with it. If you get in the way, it's your fault, and we'll chuck you out in your ear. Albon's only been here for a year. But really, shouldn't F1 be a sport where, when you finally get to F1, you are at the top of your game? You know, you don't get to play for, who's a good football team now? Are Barnsley really good? Is Colchester United still the best team in the world? You don't get to play.
Leeds got promoted.
Leeds. God, I hate Leeds. They're the worst. Oh, I'm going back to my childhood football days. I regret saying that, but in my defence, you're the worst. So you don't get to play for Colchester United without being at the very top of your game. So saying, oh, Albon's only been there for a year, only been in F1 for a year and a half, that it might be fair for the state of F1 right now, but I don't think it's fair, you know, in the context of what F1 should be. But that's not what I was talking about, Matt. We were talking about our lovely, wonderful chat room that's just gone over 900. Oh my goodness. Now I'm nervous.
That's almost making me vaguely self-aware.
I know. Thing is, though, with these figures, I predict that in the end, it'll say 6,000 people dropped into our live stream. Radio stations would kill for those figures in the current climate. So thank you for joining us. They're our second favorite people. Our favorite people are our patrons, Matt.
Yes, our patrons and our lovely community that they have created. I mean, I feel like, you know, you'd like to say, this is our show. We've put it together. We've built it. We've curated it. And actually what's happened is we got all these people who like the show so much. They gave us money so we'd keep on doing it. And they have created this amazing community for us to hang out in.
At least 10 patrons have said to me over the course of this season that the community is the reason they're still a patron. Like, it's not even about the show anymore. And they've said, there was a couple that said, oh, I don't even listen to the show. I'm here for the iRacing. And that's why they're patrons, and that's why they're part of the community. And we do try and do things because we love our patrons, and they have invested in us, not just financially, but emotionally as well. So we did extra content during the week. It's not better content, but it was more relaxed content. Me, Matt, and Catman, we actually did a live stream just for the patrons, and we did a call-in show. We'll probably do a wider call-in show for everyone at some point, but we wanted to get the technicals and rehearse it. And that was really good, Matt. We had four great call-ins over the course of an hour.
We did.
And it just showed the difference with that community and why I love hanging out in our patron Slack group is because they're invested in that community. It's like having your own, it's like having a communal garden. No one wants to leave a Twix wrapper in the middle of it because then their garden is not as good. Do you know what I mean? Whereas when you go to the beach and there are thousands, Twix wrappers everywhere.
Yeah, it just, well, I don't know. Franconian guy distracted me by his comment. Seriously, I think it is also noticeable that you're giving everything you can and that you love what you do and you know what you're talking about. And thank you. But really, the community that has grown up around the show is remarkable in itself. And the patrons, I don't know. I can't get away from it. Like, you go to Slack, I'm like, oh, I have a question about this. And I go to the tech channel and somebody there's like, oh, you need to do these amazing things to your computer that you never would have found on Google. And instantly the problem is solved.
Yeah.
Way they help each other out.
It's brilliant. Stealth says, Mr. Apex Podcast, we like you. We like you more if you pay us. Correct. Patreon.com/MissedApex. That's how we operate. Yes, we do get some income from adverts. But the reason we're here, the reason you're enjoying this right now, you might be going, oh, stop waffling about that. But the reason you're enjoying it right now is because the patrons support us. Patreon.com/MissedApex. Okay, Ferrari. Hey, Nick. How's it going, bud?
Oh, good. I have quit that team and will not be sad no matter how hard you twist the knife.
No. And I know. I trust you. When you say you're no longer emotionally invested in Ferrari and nothing I say can hurt you, I take you at your word. Let's talk about you just for a second. You are Nick Alexander. You are a handsome accountant man. You understand numbers. That's why we call you Nick Numbers.
Thank you.
That's right. I complimented you physically. However, that doesn't mean you have more value as a human because I've rated you as aesthetically pleasing. It's simply an observation. So please don't take this as a, I'm not objectifying you, okay? But you are at NickAlexanderF1 on Twitter. You do a book podcast where what you do is you stack books in interesting formations and you turn them into like beautiful arches and you encourage butterflies to land on them, which is why your book podcast is called Butterflies Landing on Books.
That is actually a perfect description of the Bookstagram culture. And it's called What's It About Podcast. It's been on a bit of a break. I've been out kind of exploring the national parks around here, stuff like that.
Yep.
But I'll bring it back. We got Uncle Steve on there sometimes, our video producer, Brilliant. Which is, you know, usually a draw for our fans here.
Brilliant. Go follow him on that podcast called whatever he said that was called. So Vettel, I think, yes, he was on the back foot a little bit from the qualifying performance. But you've got to rate his performance here, seventh in what is a pig of a car, in what is legitimately a midfield car. Four-time world champion Sebastian Vettel dragged that thing, seemingly against the will of his own team, dragged it to seventh place, is my driver of the day.
I agree with that wholeheartedly. It is everything about that. He dragged it up there. He did great. My driver of the day. It is a midfield car. I'm just looking at the points. I believe going into this weekend, Ferrari were only 2 or 3 points ahead of McLaren. I think McLaren got tied it up today. Are they tied in the constructors' standings? But yeah, we talked about the relationship between the driver and the engineer on the radio, where, you know, some people may come off like they're complaining about their tires or they're questioning the judgment of the strategy department. Some people come off as more collaborative. And then there's Sebastian, who is completely all on his own out there and can't even get his engineers to tell him which, if they're on plan A or plan B or whatever it seems. There could be more behind the scenes on the radio that we don't hear, but that was certainly the impression I got from the broadcast that it was Sebastian Vettel, chief strategist.
It felt horrible. It felt horrible. He was clearly trying to get them to make decisions, trying to get them to do stuff. We don't know what's going on in the background, but from that relationship, from what we've heard, especially last week as well, you have to imagine that behind the scenes, it's like properly ugly. And Binotto dismissed, I think I saw Anil on Twitter, our friend Anil, mention that Binotto dismissed it as the upshot of the disappointment of leaving the team. So basically saying that Vettel's kicking off because he's bitter about leaving the team. No one's loving Vettel at Ferrari, still finished seventh.
I don't know. It's pretty insulting. I mean, I think when people are leaving jobs in general, they might tune out a little bit, but it's kind of insulting to think that he would just stop being competitive.
So what I want to say about that statement is actually, I believe Binotto is referring to Vettel saying he was not going to work with the team on their future stuff, and that it was understandable since he was disappointed at not being with the team next year. So I don't think he was really being critical of Vettel in the way a lot of people seem to be taking it.
Good.
But I can't believe you haven't brought up Vettel's team radio.
Go on.
Because to me, this was absolutely positively the best part of the whole race. I mean, here Vettel is, clearly on the medium tire, possibly running a one stop. He's cleared a lot of people who've stopped, and he's got some faster folks on fresh tires coming at him. And he goes to the team. He actually bothers to talk to the team, and he says, you know, I could use some guidance on my pace right now. And he was literally told, do whatever. I mean, that's literally what they said to him. It sounded like that it was an intern in the cafe on a cell phone just giving him general advice. And then they do put him on the soft tires and they're like, push, push, push. And then 4 laps later, they're like, oh, by the way, we know you asked us about being a one stop, but do you think you can now go to the end after you've been pushing on these tires?
Well, it was almost like, oh, well, crap, Leclerc's out. Well, that's us packing up, guys. And they're like, Derek in the strategy office is like, God, no, listen, no, you are, we cannot go home. Sorry, all Italian listeners. we've still got a car in the race. And they're like, we have? Oh, yeah, okay. Ask him if he can do a one stop, Vangin.
It's a bit like when they used to forget about Kimi Räikkönen.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
they've forgotten about Seb. And all of a sudden, their horse is out of the race. And they're like, oh, okay, we might as well pack up and go, oh, hang on. isn't this a two-car team? Oh, yeah, what's he doing?
Yeah.
Oh, we've been telling him to push for 10 laps, yeah. But actually, we now need to go to the end. And I want to say I feel for Seb, but I'm not a big Seb fan. And I also feel like Leclerc still would have finished closer to the racing points.
No, I don't. I think, right, okay. So two things there. So firstly, yes, with Raikkonen, people used to go, oh, look, they're leaving Raikkonen out to hold up the Mercedes and go longer. They're sacrificing his race. No, they just forgot about him. And I think that's obvious now. But I actually think Vettel would have beaten Leclerc today. I think he ended up still somehow on the better strategy. I really think that Vettel, with that new chassis, has kind of put some of the demons away from the previous five races. And he stood up there and said, I'm still a fast racer, despite the best efforts of the team. I think beyond, if he's got a good chassis now, I tweeted that last week, no way he's got the same tools, Alex. Given that he's now had a changed chassis and appears to be, if not on the ultimate qualifying pace, certainly still a good racing driver. I think he stood up today and said, short of literally cracking my gearbox open and giving me a terrible out-and-out number two car, I'm still here and I can still beat Leclerc. And Leclerc was saved the blushes today by whatever happened to his car.
Seb is still a four-time world champion. And you don't become a four-time world champion for not being pretty damn good. And he's still going to be there. And to discount that for someone who's been in the sport for 3 years is pretty arrogant of Ferrari. But why? Ferrari being arrogant, what a surprise. You know, you have to keep two horses in the race when your second horse, even if he is your second horse who is leaving, is still a four-time world champion, especially in a season where you're struggling with your car. Let's get the maximum out of both cars and get some blooming points.
Nick?
And points are very valuable. So it's I'm the numbers guy. Somebody pointed out in the chat as well. But so Ferrari are fifth in the championship now. They're only 1 point behind McLaren, and they're only another point behind Racing Point. So they can't exactly afford to just not worry about coming in P10, P9, P8, something like that. It's critical financially.
Okay, so if they weren't Ferrari, would we be talking about them today? If that wasn't Sebastian Vettel, if that was Leclerc and Massa, I don't think we'd be talking about them today, Matt. At one point, I was looking at the timing app, lap 18, I think, and there was five constructors before you got to a Ferrari name. They are a legitimate midfield team now. Nothing happened. Nothing out of the ordinary. That's just where they are.
Oh, yeah, they're a legitimate midfield team, but I'd argue we'd still be talking about them because of all the people who made progress in today's race.
Yeah.
Vettel was the only one that cleared more than two spots, and you got to hand it to probably almost entirely him, based on his radio conversations. He got the job done, and he ran those soft tires. And this was interesting to me on the one stops, because the softs didn't work for Bottas on the two stop at all. Mercedes at the end of the race was terrible on the soft tire. But for those who switched to the soft tire on their middle stint or did the medium soft one stopper, they actually all did okay with that tire. So worth considering, it probably had a lot to do with how hard they were running the tire because the temperatures on the track were all the way up to 50. And boy, does that bring back something that really bothered me.
Go on.
When someone was complaining about their soft tire going off, probably Verstappen, and Amazon chucks up a graphic saying, oh, there's 60% of the tire left. And you're thinking, no, you utter disaster. The problem is thermal. The tire is overheating and it's totally lost performance and grip because it's turned into more of a liquid than a solid because it's a viscoelastic relationship that tire rubber has with the molecules in the asphalt. And you're just ignoring all that.
Okay, that was boring. But someone sent me an interesting email. I'm so sorry. Please, spannersready@gmail.com, remind me if this was you. And someone pointed out that basically the AWS, AGS, the tire thing, which is garbage, is a commercial contract. So they've paid to have their graphics up and their name up. And the commentators have likely been instructed to follow that. We went into a lot of depth about this a couple of weeks ago. It's horribly distracting. That graphic goes up and you go, Verstappen's fine. And it's worthless. Vanjie, come on.
Yeah, I literally pay no attention to that when it pops. It's actually an annoyance when it pops up. I'm like, they don't know. They have absolutely no idea. It's based on it. All it is based on is Pirelli's prediction of how many laps a tire will do, which yeah. the Formula One teams have proved in the past they can surpass those. And once was it correct, which was at, you know, Silverstone a couple of weeks ago when tires blew up. But apart yeah. from that, 90% of the time it's wrong.
So I'm not blaming the commentators. They're under contract, and that will be part of their commercial agreement. In the chat room, somebody pointed out that Brundle, Barry. Hello, Barry. Said, anyone else notice Brundle's annoyance when Crofty talks about the tyre graphics? Yeah, that's because, yeah, I think, you know, Brundle's generally spot on when it comes to things like that. And I would imagine he would suffer fools and foolish graphics not gladly. I said that phrase wrong. Right, Matt, where are we? Where are we in this show? I think we've got a week without a race review. And so next week, we're going to have just a normal news show. I think we'll pick up a lot of the midfield battle stuff because, you know, other podcasts, they'll have just had their, they'll just about have got their race review out by the time we do our sort of little mini break show on Sunday.
Yeah. And there's plenty to talk about. For example, we have the new party mode rules. We
exactly.
have a loss of downforce being talked about for next season.
Really?
Which... Yeah,
let's not get into that. Let's do that in the newsy bit when we do that. And I'm sure we can do another because we did the Patreon live stream. When did we do that? We did that on Friday after FP2.
On Friday.
We could make a habit of that. I liked jumping straight on. I was in my shed watching FP2. I liked then jumping straight on and doing a little podcast thing. So we'll have a little think about that. And I still want my little call-in idea. I still like the idea of having a dedicated call-in Miss Apex stream.
I do love that. And maybe we might have some friends that we could get together with.
Dave from down the pub?
Yeah, Dave from down the pub.
Oh, you mean people like Matthew Carter?
Possibly, yes.
You mean people like Joe? Do you think Joe would do a call-in? Joe Saywood?
Don't know.
Maybe he would.
Maybe.
Joe came to your house. He'd do anything now.
Okay, hang on. Be steady. He came to my shed.
Uh-oh.
He came to my shed only.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh.
I'm sensing a whole bunch of jokes that I'm not going to tell right now.
Right, let's leave it there. What I want to do is say that if there's any midfield stuff that we want to talk about, let's deliver that in the podium section of the show, and that's coming up right now. Hi guys, this is Missed Apex Podcast that you're listening to right now. I don't know why it's not the radio. You haven't just tuned in on the wireless. It's a podcast that you're listening to or watching deliberately, but that's what it is. It's Missed Apex Podcast. We can be found on Twitter at Missed Apex F1. We can also be found on Facebook by searching for Missed Apex Podcast. Me and Matt, we're followable. Not just those two, not just Nick at Nick Alexander F1 and Alex Van Gene at Alex Van Gene. Me and Matt, you can follow us too at MattPT55, or you can be his friend by searching for Matt Trumpets on Facebook, where he just posts literally pictures of trumpets every day. And
food.
And he says to people, do you like that trumpet? And then if you don't say yes, he attacks you personally, finds out about your family history, and insults those you love the most. But overall, I would still recommend adding you on Facebook.
For a fee. I'll do the insults for a fee.
There we go. Oh, someone said maybe we should offer answer phone messages. Like we can leave your answer phone message. But that would be quite niche. It's like your answer phone message is a podcast that no one's heard of. You can follow me at SpannersReady on Twitter and follow my Instagram. That's what I'm going to push today. Follow my Instagram. Search SpannersReady on Instagram. The more people are following me, the more I'm using it. And it's quite good and it's quite fun. And it's not quite as shouty as Facebook and Twitter. So I'm sort of enjoying it for the minute. So let's talk about the Spanish Grand Prix that we just watched, guys. So as I said at the beginning of the show, you know, I had my race ritual. I watched it. I kind of know Barcelona isn't going to be amazing. But I enjoyed my 2 hours of watching F1, the drama of it, the radio, the racing, watching the live timing streams, that great midfield scrap, watching Lando Norris and Charles Leclerc with also, you know, Gasly bombing around by them and stuff and going, wow, you know, we're really watching like, you know, a window into 2023 F1. You know, we're seeing Lando Norris defending from Leclerc. Who else was in that mix? But you had Vettel catching them up too. Ricciardo in that battle as well. And you went, you know, there's value here. And I was arguing with some people on Twitter because I got triggered, basically. I enjoyed the race, then I went online to do all our social media stuff, and people were real like moaning, complaining, Alex. And I get it. I get it. If this wasn't your perfect race, I get it. If this wasn't exactly the race you wanted, I get it. If your driver didn't and team didn't do amazing, I get that. And not every race is going to be a thriller. And I myself have argued that the cars have outgrown Barcelona. I've said that on this podcast loads of times. But just to just go onto Twitter with just this wave of negativity, it's coming from certain sources that we're aware from as well. There's just this F1 Twitter in particular. I know I'm focusing on F1 Twitter, but F1 Twitter just seems to have this big bubble of negativity, and it just kind of ruined my race. I went on there and I went, I'm not coming on Twitter again after races, because my high, my buzz from watching the race has just been done in.
I don't know what WTF is the issue with things people at the moment. I think people look at the race and go, well, there isn't a fight for the win, therefore the race is boring. And that's completely incorrect. You know, the fight we saw between a Ferrari, a McLaren and a Renault today, and then a white car tagging on to the end,
yeah,
was fantastic. The racecraft between those four drivers, those four young guns in the sport, who are, as you said, going to be part of us for 2023 and beyond, was absolutely fantastic. Mm. But okay, yeah, because Lewis is galloping off at the beginning at the front doesn't mean it's a boring race. It just means you have to look at a different part of the racetrack to actually get the entertainment. And to be fair, for once, the race directors did a really good job at focusing on other parts of the race today. And I think it's people expecting a crazy fight at the front is what's causing them to say the race may have been dull. But one last thing, Spanners, it's never been that way.
No.
I don't know why people expect that to change.
No, F1 has never been every single race, you know, guys scrapping up. You have to endure, you know, a guy disappearing off for a couple of years. And as we talked about last season, you know, the regulations swing back another way and you get a sweet spot just in time for everyone to master the regulations. And then they change them in an inexplicably abhorrent way. So it's never been the front five guys swapping positions. It's never been, you know, you can just go and watch bike racing. Like motorbike racing is like that a lot. And if that's what you want, brilliant, like crack on. Oh, you know, my dad made me sit through so much MotoGP and the other kind of bikes. Oh no, the super special super noodle bikes made me sit and watch that. Like I understand bike racing. It's fantastic. This is Formula One. And it's never been how people want it to be or seem to want it to be.
So what interests me most about this is that I'm looking back at my review and I realize that from Albon in 8th down to Kvyat in 12th, every car was in DRS of the car in front. So Vettel had created a train. And the only reason we weren't screaming about the race is because no one actually succeeded in making an overtake on that last lap. But you had the potential was there. I mean, it was this huge train of midfield cars all in DRS, all with a chance to maybe make a pass. It didn't happen this time, but it's not going to happen every time because it's racing. That's the way it works.
So I've got a theory. I've got a rolling theory that only people who are Sebastian Vettel fans think that the race today was boring and terrible. So Nick, what did you think of the race today?
I don't think it was terrible. I think it's pretty fair to say that it was relatively boring as far as the races lately have gone. I mean, it certainly wasn't as good as the previous race.
That's fine.
I feel like I've read a lot of the comments on Twitter and I've read a lot of the comments on Reddit. And I think you and Alex may be accusing people of saying things that they're not saying. Like, I don't know. I don't know that I saw people say, well, because Hamilton ran away with it and P1 was totally secure, therefore the race was boring. I mean,
I do think people said that.
Okay. It wasn't just P1 though. There wasn't really anybody really changing station all the way back to P6.
Well, hang on. I mean, let's let Alex get in because I know, you know, obviously we watch a lot of karting and you don't always get people swapping positions, but you can still have good racing.
If Lewis Hamilton wasn't in the race today, and Max Verstappen beat a Mercedes for the race win, that would have been a classic Grand Prix.
Yeah.
Everyone would have been really, really excited that somebody had beaten the Mercedes. And that's the issue. It's a case of Lewis is that much better than Bottas at the moment, that he manages to get extra performance out of the car. Max is that much better than Albon, that he managed to get that much more performance out of the car throughout the whole weekend, let alone just the race. And it jades the perspective. If you take Lewis out, we've got a really close title.
I think, Matt, what upsets me the most is I think, you know, I am a middle-aged F1 fan. I can remember the before time. So to me, F1 now feels so much better. Like, it feels so much better than 80s and 90s F1. I would have definitely swapped. You know, I don't have those rose-tinted glasses of the past. But I think also, I didn't grow up with social media. I didn't grow up with Reddit and Twitter and Facebook. And these are all things that I was even late for my generation. I was late finding the internet. Genuinely, like, dismissed the internet till 2008, going like, you know, what would you need all that for? It's fine. I could just live my life. I know. So I've tried to catch up since. But when I've enjoyed a thing in real life, and then I go online to see what my peers, and better than my peers and below my peers, when I look at what people are saying about F1 and they're just sucking the joy out of it, I go, "What? Why are you doing that? What? Why are you even watching?" But just my advice to the people who are really complaining about this kind of race would be, you know, F1 is watched over a season and it's watched over an era. And even the Grand Prix where Lewis Hamilton won on three wheels, people and outlets were still complaining that it was only interesting at the end. And well, that's good enough. And maybe I'm showing my age now to go, well, you know what? If you have a sort of strategic 4D chess Grand Prix and then you have four amazing laps of drama at the end, that's amazing. That's great for me. I'll take that. But maybe I'm just out of step with current times and people want it to be explosions.
So I love that. Formula One, you know, chess is not mixed martial arts. Both can be interesting to watch depending upon who you are. So, you know, your expectations have to be right. But I have a competing theory.
Okay.
Or maybe a complementary theory.
Good.
Which is that, first of all, we should all take a moment and be delighted that we have any kind of a sport to watch at all right now. Number one, because, oh my goodness, it could very easily be that there is no racing at all this year.
We could be rugby, where you're just not allowed to do it.
Yep. And second of all, we've had three race weekends in a row. Normally, it's every other week we get to watch it. I think that people are just, there's been so much to watch in such a short period of time that maybe they're losing a little bit of perspective as well.
We've not only had three weekends in a row, we've had three weekends in a row where one tires blew up, the other one,
three wheels winner.
Had tires dying and Max Verstappen winning a race. So you've gone from two crazy races to what is a normal Formula One race. Mm. So of course people are going to think it's boring, but you've got to look a little bit deeper.
And let's just look forward to when I'm a hypocrite next season at Monaco, because now I'm saying, you have to temper your expectations for Barcelona. And then when it gets to Monaco, I'm like, no, that's ridiculous. This is terrible. That's the one race I do it. But to be fair, Monaco's a farce. Barcelona, the track isn't ideal for overtaking and that kind of wheel-to-wheel racing. Hungary performed better with this series of cars. However, Barcelona is still a real racetrack. It's not optimal, but it's still a real racetrack. So, just, you know, I'm preempting arguments that are going to come at me in 18 months, Nick. That's how petty and jaded I am.
Right, and you're always fair about setting up long term arguments and holding people to predictions they made years ago.
So hold me to that.
I guess. If we can agree, if you thought today was boring and you can agree that they can't all be, you know, the race of the year, they can't all be the 70th anniversary Grand Prix or whatever it was called. I mean, if Spain is not the greatest year after year after year, at what point would you Spaniards be willing to entertain holding a Spanish Grand Prix at a different circuit in Spain and giving that a try?
My answer is now. Now. I've long said that we've outgrown Barcelona. My general point from this really is, just because you had a race that you didn't love doesn't mean you have to dump all over it and just become like a succubus of joy. Alex.
Sorry, outgrown is the wrong phrase for the circuit. It's not like this is a small circuit. The reason this circuit is difficult is it is such a high aero dependency circuit that when you have such high aero cars, it creates an issue with the wake. We haven't outgrown it, but it's just a case of it's always a difficult circuit to overtake on because aero is so key.
Nick.
Okay, just a small point because we are coming up against the 60-minute strict time limit.
Yeah, that's true.
I think part of the reason, too, was that qualifying didn't really pan out. It kind of had potential. A lot of people didn't improve their second runs in Q2 or Q3. So I think there was kind of like a little bit of a rolling disappointment from Saturday is all. And that's all I have to say about that.
No, that's fine. And look, a lot of boring F1 races are made interesting by a well-timed safety car. We didn't have that. A lot of F1 races are made interesting by a close wall that is hit. We didn't have that today. A lot of F1 races are made interesting by rain. Can we stop doing weather forecasts in F1? If it rains, it rains. God damn it. Just leave it there. And a lot of times in F1, qualifying, as Nick says, goes haywire and we get cars out of position. And that gives us an interesting race. We can't complain when F1 does exactly what it's supposed to do. It qualifies the fastest car and the fastest driver at the front and then everyone behind it in order. There was no crashes because everyone did well and there was no safety cars. The walls and the runoff areas did their job to keep us, to keep all the cars and drivers safe, and we had perfect weather. We can't really complain when everything goes really well, Nick.
Yeah, well, I thought we were going to get a safety car when Leclerc spun. I was really hoping for one. I didn't really know what the implications would even be, but it would have been nice.
And we should have got one because Leclerc took his seatbelt off.
Yes.
So the engine died on him, rear wheels locked, and he spun. Okay. That's what happens when your engine dies, your rear axle completely locks. And so the spin wasn't his fault at all. Mm. He sits there and he's trying to figure it out and he's trying to work it. And it's double wave yellows. He's then thought, oh, okay, race is over, has undone his seatbelts. Then he's been told to try something else, has tried it and fired the engine up. And these cars generate 3-4G under braking. So sitting in these cars without your seatbelt on is mega dangerous. So the fact that his belts are off, he should have driven straight from the last corner where he was straight into the pit lane. But he didn't. He drove down the straight and did another lap without seatbelts on. How he hasn't got a massive belt.
Whoa. Hang on. What? He did a lap without his seatbelts on. Yeah. I didn't know that. Nick.
He went round the rest of the lap without his seatbelts on.
Right. What I would even argue Alex's point. Should he even with his seatbelt undone, even drive directly to the pits, not pass go, do not collect $200. He should have maybe thrown it in reverse and backed further away from the track, but there ought to be a rule. Yeah. And there probably is that says once you begin to exit the vehicle, you exit the vehicle.
There definitely is a rule. Spare Stewart, who is ex-fake Charlie Whiting. Mark McArdle, who's annoyingly fast in a iRacing car, by the way. He suddenly popped up in one of my races and I was like, oh, I'm going to get the fake Charlie Whiting guy. No, he's proper quick. So at Spare Stewart, I think he is on Twitter, highlighted the rule there and a good debate on that thread. Guys, let's give out some awards. Let's start off all positive and fluffy with our Thing of the Weekend award. We're all in a safe place. Come on, everyone. Gather round. Tell your stories. No one's going to judge you here. Nick, this is a safe place.
Okay. The good thing for me, which you've already said is a safe space, you can't be mad.
Ooh,
Stroll's launch from the start.
I'm not mad. I don't hate Stroll. I will change my mind on Stroll when the evidence changes. And on the evidence of today, he did a good start and he was actually great in turn one. And he did a robust defense of Sergio Perez and he didn't get a penalty for a blue flag, which Perez did. So I'm not going to disagree with you, Nick.
Right. And he has gotten some flack for his good starts in the past because he was not qualifying where the car should be.
Yeah.
But this time the car was where it was supposed to be. And he still did the good launch. So he did the good thing.
Fair play. Alex, you actually think Stroll is now better than Perez?
No.
That's exactly what you trolled me with on WhatsApp day.
My opinion on the Perez Stroll thing was magnified by the performance that Hulk put in the last 2 weeks. The fact that Hulk came in and very, very quickly overtook Stroll, I think makes Perez look less good than he is, than we perceive him to be. Maybe I judge Stroll too heavily and I don't think he's good enough. And maybe I judge Perez too highly than he actually is. But I think there still should be a bigger gulf between the racing points than there actually is.
Okay, good. Everyone go on mute. I'm going to speak for 25 minutes. So,
can I have my good thing before we go into this?
No. So I would just say, look, Perez had an injury in Hungary. He was off for 2 weeks. He's come back in. He's out-qualified Stroll. He looked faster than Stroll in the race. He was definitely attacking him. You could say that Stroll was managing that gap. You can't even say that without the penalty, Perez would have used his tyre-saving ability to finish ahead of Stroll, because Stroll was really denied the opportunity to go and attack Perez, because there was no point, because there was a five-second gap. Get within a few seconds, and you're ahead of him. So you can't do anything but say Stroll, you know, he did the best possible he could today, this weekend. I don't think it says that much about Perez. He was unlucky with that penalty, and he was unlucky. Obviously, I think a criticism of Perez, I think he is overly cautious into turn one in general. Like, he would rather let a few people go by him and then make that up later in the race. Okay, so I get all that. I think it was churlish of you to be trolling me all day in WhatsApp saying that basically Stroll and Perez are the same. We will speak in November, but I don't think it's going to pan out like that. I think Perez will comfortably outscore and outperform Stroll over the season.
For me, at the moment, my only point is I don't think Perez is as far ahead of Stroll as maybe I think he should be.
Fair.
As I said before, that's probably me holding each driver in regard maybe higher or lower than I possibly should do. But yeah, in November, I'm wholeheartedly happy to say, well done, Perez, for destroying Stroll. But I feel like Perez needs to destroy Stroll.
No.
I don't feel like he's just going to beat him. I feel like Russell has to do with his teammates.
No other.
I feel like he has to destroy Stroll.
Vanjie, no other driver is being set this task of having to destroy their teammate. But okay, we'll put a pin in that.
Max is doing it anyway.
Yeah, okay. But Matt.
So is Lewis. Which leads me to my thing of the weekend.
No, it doesn't. Matt's about to make a point. Matt, Perez, Stroll, if we're going to damn him with faint praise, he's not as disappointing as he's been over the last five seasons. If you're going to spend five seasons doing a thing, even if you weren't brilliant at it to start with, you're going to improve with coaching and with some basic ability. Point is, obviously, other drivers wouldn't have got that opportunity. So if we're going to say Stroll is less bad than previous seasons, and even quite up to general F1 standard, I'm happy with that.
Kind of makes you wonder what other drivers might have done had they been afforded that indulgent a treatment. But where I want to go is someplace simple.
Yeah.
There's a reason Perez got a one-stop strategy and Stroll didn't.
Go on.
Because Stroll still can't manage the tires to that level.
Yeah.
And if there's one thing that makes for the best Formula One drivers right now, it's the ability to manage those tires. And I can mention Lewis Hamilton, who was barely a tenth ahead of his teammate in qualifying and yet crushes him regularly in races. And it's almost always down to the ability to manage the tires. We heard the call, Perez, manage your slip angles.
Yes, we all know what that
means. Because your tires are overheating.
Vanjie, what's your thing of the weekend?
My thing of the weekend, and I haven't done this in a while, so I'm going to revel in it,
okay,
is Lewis Hamilton.
Hooray!
He was peerless today. Even though how good Max was, Lewis was absolutely phenomenal today. He didn't even realize he was on the last lap.
Well, he says
you
that.
Know, when it came to him, he was in his own.
No, Alex, I'm sorry. I'm not buying that. Lewis is.
I'm not saying I bought it, but it's what he said.
Lewis is a performer. Lewis loves the drama of it. Oh, I was doing so well. I didn't even realize I was on the last. It's basically Ron Burgundy with the weights, isn't it? He goes, oh, I've lost count. I did so many bicep curls. That's what that was. I'm not buying that.
But anyone who can doubt that Lewis is on a different plane today, it wasn't watching what we were watching. The fact that Max was having a go at him for going too slow, and Max knew the game.
Yes.
Max wasn't stupid. No. Max knew Lewis was just going very, very slowly. And then all of a sudden he pulled the pin. And it wasn't the fact that he pulled the pin by half a second. He pulled the pin by a second and a half.
Yeah, lots. Yeah.
That's how much Lewis had today. And where you could normally attribute that to the car.
Yeah.
Bottas didn't have it.
True.
So
let's move on. Matt Trumpets.
Lewis is my boy.
Well done. Matt Trumpets. What's your thing of the weekend?
Battle. Vettel's race.
Damn it.
Sorry. I mean, it was. He gained more positions than anyone, barely helped out by, you can hear in the background.
Yeah, is that an ice cream van?
No, it's some massive piece of construction machinery backing up outside my window.
No worries. Vettel, that's a fair shout.
Yeah, it just like, you know, they gave him the new chassis. They gave him no other help. And despite all that, he managed to get a pair of soft tires to last as long as anyone. And on the one-stop strategy, he was the only one who made that kind of forward progress. Mm-hmm. He's not a four-time world champion by entire accident, is kind of what I'm saying. And given all the difficulties, he's maintained a pretty good attitude about things overall. So hats off to him. Good job this week.
I am going to give my thing of the weekend to Red Bull. When the rest of the field, and I know it's a short lap, when the rest of the field is getting lapped and trounced, Max Verstappen and Red Bull are in the fight, forcing Mercedes' hand. And, well, he's beaten three out of four Mercedes in the last two weekends. So in the last two weekends, Nick, he's had the opportunity to beat Hamilton and Bottas twice. And he's beaten Bottas twice. He's beaten Hamilton once. Pretty good.
Right. And so on that topic, also the pit stop time, I believe Max had a 1.9 and a 2.0 for his two stops.
Yes.
I mean, wow, that is fast.
And crucially, that did put them out in front of cars that they might otherwise have been stuck behind. Van Gene.
Talking about pit stops. Does anyone watch it like pit stop and go, oh, that's a bit slow, and then it's 2.3 seconds and you're like, oh, I have a really high expectation of how fast the pit stop should be?
Yeah,
because 1.9 and 2.0 is just bonkers. Lewis had a slow, there's a couple of slow pit stops,
only 4 seconds.
Lewis had a
4.5 second
pit stop, didn't he?
Yeah, well, there we go. Well, he stopped to like let them know how it was going, you know. That's the kind of race he had. Lewis Hamilton
took a sip of tea.
Completely in control today. So that's enough positivity for now. Let's slate people with this award.
Oh, no, you missed the apex.
Okay, let's hurry it up a little bit, guys. A little bit more quick fire here. Nick Alexander, who missed the apex for you?
I'm just going to keep trying to say things that I think might make you mad. So I think Checo ignoring blue flags. I think he missed the little LED lights. I mean, you just have to move over. If it flashes right there on your steering wheel, you see it. You're looking at the thing all the time. You might look at it in FP3 and crash into the back of somebody or throw it into the wall to avoid it. And there's no excuse to miss that. And he lost out to his teammate as a result. I mean,
Well, firstly, very sad that your debut is your last show here on Missed Apex podcast. The only defense I will give for Perez is I can't remember the last time I saw a penalty for blue flags being ignored. And then in this race, we've had two. So they've kind of got three. Was that three? No, two. Two or three? Two. So they've obviously got a bit of a trouser bulge about blue flags in this race. And they've gone, we're going to make a point about blue flags, and I think Kvyat and Perez were the victims of that.
I think it's also because cars that aren't used to getting lapped got lapped. Perez's big argument about it was, well, I was trying to actually let Lewis go at a bit that would cost him and me the least amount of time.
Yes.
Because I think they wanted him just to let out him pass the way, before the chicane, which would have been terrible for both of them. So he wanted to let him go before turn one because that's where they lose the least time.
In his defense, he was in P4.
Yeah, that's true. Matt.
And if we're being fair and read the steward's document, you would see that it was from turn six to turn one of the following lap.
Matt, you're cutting out. It's a bad signal. You're back now, just in time for your Missed Apex Award. Who gets that?
I think Red Bull for Albon's strategy. It baffles me. They could have put him on different tires. They could have pitted him in front of the battle that they put him out behind. It doesn't make any sense to me why that happened.
Alex, who missed the apex for you?
I have two. I think I'm going to go with the worst one. Is Albon. You can't be 7/10 regularly off your teammate, especially a track like this where it's so hard to overtake. You just can't be that far. You need to be the wingman for your teammate. Red Bull could have split the Mercs today, and they didn't because Albon was 7/10 off his teammate.
Okay, firstly, Red Bull did split the Mercs, but I get your point. Your point stands.
Both Red Bulls could have split the Mercs today.
Yeah. But also, that's going to, you know, this isn't the last Barcelona-y track. You know, if people are upset now that Barcelona wasn't thrilling, they're getting awfully excited about Imola. I think you're going to be... might be slightly disappointed at Imola. Yeah,
it's two at Russia.
Yeah, we've got two races. Oh my goodness. that certain media outlet's going to go absolutely nuts over that fortnight. And then we're going to go to Portimao. We have no idea, you know, what that track's going to be like.
It's a massive circuit. Isn't it? And there's a country mile long straight.
Okay.
Should be overtaking there.
So in those tracks, though, where it is hard to overtake, which we will have this year, this season. Nürburgring might be challenging. The Nürburgring GP circuit might be challenging to overtake. It's quite narrow. We all have fond memories of it, and we like it when racing Formula Renaults on iRacing. But it is, you know, I don't think maybe F1 tracks, it'll be quite Barcelona-y as well. And you're right, Albon does need to be up there. My Mr. Apex award has to go to the Ferrari pit wall for just out loud not caring. Like, if you're going to do it, don't do it so blatantly. Like, there's plenty of ways you can sabotage a driver you don't like. You don't have to out loud just disrespect him in that way. I hope they're having a meeting at wherever. Where do Ferrari live? Rome.
Maranello.
I think it's the Colosseum in Rome. I think that's where they do all their garaging. I hope they're having a meeting about how that looked, because it looked terrible. It looked bad. And there's a whole 2/3 of a season left with that driver, and I think they need to do a little better. Pony awards? Have we got a pony? Hang on, I'm sure we've got a pony award. Hang on, I've got to press the button though. Don't jump the gun.
Daddy, I want a pony, and I want it now.
Pony award, Van Gien.
My pony.
What on earth are you about to say?
Missed Apex after dark.
Yeah. My pony goes to Nico Rosberg. Because on the grid, Martin Brundle was talking about tactics that drivers take against their teammates and called Nico Rosberg on the Monaco driving down the slip road thing. And I can't remember Nico's exact words, but it was basically along the lines of, don't talk about what you don't know. And I'm like, yeah, we all know, Nico, you drove down the slip road on purpose to stop a qualifying lap for your teammate. It was very, very telling that he was like, no, please don't talk about that.
I think that's good. I think that'll do for ponies for now. You could point at Max, but I think that would be harsh. Matt?
I don't.
No!
I think it's entirely... How many times have we lambasted, mentioned Lewis for the exact same sort of behavior? He was whining on about his tires. Yes, he drove a great race. Yes, he won last week. Yes, we all love him. But fair is fair does. We have to at least mention him at this point.
Narrator voice, Spanners checks the demographics for the last episode's worldwide listenership figures. I think Max was fine, and you are wrong for saying that. How dare you, Matt Trumpet? Good. That leaves us with one award, Matt, and that is for our live stream, and that is for...
Comment of the Week.
Comment of the Week. Give us, Matt, I'm going to restrict you to 27 nominees today, but you have to go through them quickly. And allow me a slight pause to make an interesting and or insightful comment in response to that nominee.
Fair enough. But as always, we start out with those who gave to us so generously in the Super Chat. iHammer, Marcio Gonzalez, Cassio Rocha, Vermans, and Damian Lawrence, thank you very much for your kind support. If you don't like to use Super Chat, I believe you can go to the website where there is a tip jar.
Mr.
Or
Apex.
If you were feeling particularly generous and are not already a patron, you're always free to do that as well.
Patreon.com.
However you support us, we appreciate it.
Thank you. Patreon.com/MissedApex or MissedApexPodcast.com/tipjar or MissedApexPodcast.com/buystuff if you want things that have Missed Apex graphics on them, and then you will get a thing in return for your money, and we will get a small amount of that money. And yes, we do like money. money can be exchanged for goods and services, which is why we like it. Matt.
All right. We will start with our favorite Doom Whale. It was a she shed, he shed pun, because in honor of Nick Alexander, who is on the show.
Nick's here.
Can't argue it. John O. Huber is in with Haas accidentally switched on the Ferrari 2019 spec fuel flow, which funny. Yes. Yes.
Like that.
Mark Greenhow discussing motorcycle riders says they are appropriately called organ donors.
That's a
harsh,
bit,
but true.
No, that's way too harsh. That can't win.
The Da Vinci 1998 says bring Kubica to Red Bull for 2021. And yes, I said his name differently because I felt like it.
Oh, okay. I don't agree. I think we did that plot line.
And finally, our friend Lauren Christ is in with the potentially racist. It's hard for the Ferrari strategist to examine the computer and click on buttons when they are using their hands to talk.
Oh, man, nothing makes you more nervous on a live stream than when your co-host says, hey, I'm going to read out this potentially racist thing. You're lucky. It was just an offensive stereotype. So, I don't know. That's
kind of
borderline. Who's the winner, Matt?
I think it has to be Lauren Christ, for it's hard for the Ferrari strategist to examine the computer and click on buttons when they are using their hands to talk.
Under protest, we award that.
Comment of the week.
Missed Apex Podcast would like to distance itself from the comments of Matt Trumpets. And, what? I'm covering my
butt. Matt Trumpets defense, he is an old white guy. He's just doing the best he can.
old white guys be old white guying. There we go. Apologies to all the old white guys listening. Ah, it's taking a bad turn. Thank you for tuning in to Missed Apex Podcast. Tell your friends, please, that you enjoy after a race tuning in and watching these guys chatting from a shed. You can direct them to MissedApexPodcast.com. It always has our latest video and audio version ready. Just click play. So if you share that link with your friends, MissedApexPodcast.com, they have it instantly. Two clicks. Click the link you sent them and click their choice of audio or video. You can follow us. I'm at Spanners Ready. The show is at MissedApexF1. Alex Van Gene, he's there. Follow him at Alex Van Gene, VanGeen. There we go. I think that's a derivative of a Dutch name you've said in the past, Alex. So it was Van Gen, Van Gene, Van Gen.
Van Gein.
Van Gein. There we go.
Van Gein.
I like that. But
and
now,
also go to my YouTube. I'm going to be streaming live straight after the show.
No, don't, because I'm going to be drinking Jack Daniels and playing shooty gun games and saying horribly offensive things. Please don't tune in. So we've also got Nick Alexander at Nick Alexander F1, and his podcast is called What's It About Podcast. I got it right.
What's It About Podcast.com.
Okay. Yeah, go follow him doing that. And Matt is at MattPT55, but primarily he would like you to follow his wife at A Weaver Writes, who is not only an excellent author who writes smutty books that you might enjoy as a family. Not a family, as a couple. Definitely said that wrong. Not as a family. But also, Amanda is a good follow on Twitter. She's very passionate and articulate, Matt.
Yes. And occasionally, when she's talking about costumes and clothes, is thoroughly informative, as she is an expert on that stuff.
Awesome. Well, we will see you next Sunday, definitely. And we are going to have Brad and a special guest on to talk about some racy car stuff. And we're going to try and catch up with Matthew Carter as well in the week, the ex-Lotus F1 CEO. And we're going to try and put a Patreon podcast live stream together as well. But wherever you see us next, be brave, because wounds heal, chicks dig scars, and glory lasts forever. This was Missed Apex.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices.
Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.